This Sunday, I ran the marathon, the White Rock Marathon. Anybody else out there? Thank you. It was cold and wet, and I had a great time. I ran with my buddy David Zena. He goes here, and he got really hot. He's a madman. He took his shirt and jacket off at mile 7 and ran the next 19 miles in the wind and the rain and 43-degree weather with no shirt on. So he's crazy. It took him like all day long to warm up. And but I had a lot of really a ton of fun until about mile 21 and a half, and I completely seized up. Like, I had cramps in my legs so bad I couldn't move, and so I'm running up the hills, and I'm trying to stay in front of the guys that were running 4 hours, 4 hour pace. I'm a big guy, and I was feeling really good, and I was like, I'm going to beat the 4 hour mark. And I got to the top of this hill and just completely locked up. I felt it mid-step, and I said, uh-oh, and I landed, and I couldn't move, and I was just yelling. My hamstrings are completely knotted up, and so I just kind of screamed for a minute. There were buses right there, and they were all trying to get me to get on the bus, and I was like, no way, dude, I'm not getting on that bus. I'm going to finish this. And so I just kind of would rub. I'd run in about 2 or 3 minute increments and just kind of rub my legs out and with my knuckles, and I couldn't feel them. I was freezing cold, and just kind of went and finished. And all in all, it was a lot of fun. But I got later that day, I was just reflecting back. I was like, that was hard. And that was crazy. I mean, I thought about all the time that I'd invested this year in running. All the mornings I'd woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning on Saturday to go meet David and run and talk, and all the investment of that, and then just how much I just pushed through, the cramping and just the fatigue and the weather and all of that. And I just thought about just my own marriage, and I was like, man, how hard would you push to have a great marriage? You know, if you cramped up, if it hurt really bad, would you push through? Or would you hop on the bus at 21 and a half, you know? And I just got pretty convicted that I think myself, I think a lot of us will do a lot of crazy things to achieve goals, but we won't work half as hard in our own marriage. And so, we were in Kansas City, on the way to Kansas City 2 weeks ago for Thanksgiving. And we're driving up there, and trying to. I'm like Clark Griswold around holidays. I mean, I just always have these amazing expectations about what holidays are going to be like, and I can't wait to get there. My brother's there, and it's the whole thing. The kids are going to be awesome. The food's going to be amazing. Conversation will just be it'd be interesting, And it hardly ever works out like that, You guys, the holidays. And so we're riding up there, and I just remember it was just kind of a conglomeration of different things that just weren't going the way. The way that I'd hoped, the way that that I had wanted, like we had you've got withdrawals and you've got deposits, and we had some deposits that weren't in yet. And with the holidays and sports, I mean, money was just flying out of our checking account. I remember looking at that going, what? Like, where's all this money going? And Pam's like, extravagant things like electricity and food and shoes. And I remember being really, really agitated with it. And so how quickly I wanted to just turn against her rather than just kind of go, hey, this is my wife. We are one. I've been given a gift and work on this stuff together. I was really surprised at how quickly my heart wanted to turn on her. And so got back, and all the deposits hit. Everything's amazing, and we're great, right? And I just thought, the way that situationally I reacted, I was really just kind of disappointed, exposed some stuff in my heart, and always just made me grateful for God's grace and then my wife's grace as well. So been doing a lot of thinking on marriage, failing some, having some successes the last few weeks. So it's fun to be back. Tonight, I wanted to talk about expectations and just how powerful they can be in our marriage. And I would say that we have expectations about every single thing in our marriage, right? We've got expectations about the way we would communicate. We've got expectations about finances, both the way they'd be handled, the way we would kind of have our accounts set up, where we would be, where we should supposed to be at this season. We've got expectations about our spouse, about the way that they would parent. We've got expectations about the way they would be sexually responsive. We've got expectations about every single thing thing in our marriage and in our life. And when they're not met, we tend to be pretty disappointed and feel a range of emotions. It's a lot of times starting in disappointment, moving to sadness, a lot of times even to anger. And it's really interesting, a lot of times couples, when we first did re-engage, we had just kind of some pilot groups, and it was amazing how many couples at year 7 were in here. I looked at the spreadsheet one day, and there was about 10 couples in re-engage, and I think 9 of them had been married 7 years. And so what oftentimes happens in marriage is that about year 2, you realize that your expectations about who you thought you were marrying might not actually come to pass, right? So she was hoping for one long, great, meaningful conversation, and he was hoping they would have one long, interesting sexual experience. And at two years, that he's kind of, and she's both is going, that might not happen. What a bummer. And but there's still hope. Maybe things will change. And then you get to year 7 and you go, you know what, that's not going to happen. And so now I'm not disappointed or concerned. Now I'm angry because my expectations weren't met. And so that happens for all of us. And so we talk about oftentimes James 4:1, that is why we fight. It's because we're selfish, because there are selfish desires which wage war within our souls, James says. That's why we fight. But a lot of times it's the expectations, the unmet expectations that surface that. And that is when, if you guys will think about it, when do you fight? It's when you had, oftentimes when you had an expectation about the way things should be, and when they weren't met, it kind of triggered something inside of you, and you became frustrated or angry. Okay, Proverbs 13:12 says, "A hope deferred makes a heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life." A hope deferred makes a heart sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. There's just something about getting what we want and desire that just does something to our soul, right? When my checking account is what I wanted it to be, I'm good. And when it's not what I wanted it to be, it kind of spins me up, right? And so you think about, I was thinking about expectations this week about the way we kind of think about Christmas presents. So I don't know what the hot new gift is for you. Like for kids this year, it's the iPad or the Leap Pad 2 or Leap Pad, like the little kids Leap Pad, retails for $99. And so I've got a bunch of buddies, and they got alerts from Amazon and things like that. And they snap them up as quick as they get on there. They're sold out everywhere, and then they double the price on them. So a lot of my friends are paying for Christmas by flipping these little Leap Pad 2 things. They're the reason you can't get them. Right? So that's the hot item for kids. You know, for adults, probably, I don't know if it's the iPad 2 is the big deal, whatever it is for you. But imagine, you started sending messages back this summer to your spouse about, hey, this is what I want, right? And so this isn't actually an iPad 2, just one more thing I'd mess up, lose, or couldn't find the cord to. So I don't need one. But I was just imagining, like, if I told Pam this summer, hey, I want an iPad. Like if you're asking, which you weren't, but if you're asking for Christmas, like what I would want, it would be an iPad. And so, you know, the commercials came on, and I was just kind of like, you know, that would be cool if I had one of those, and just dropped hints all year long. And got to Christmas, and it was Christmas morning, and my wife said, hey, here's what I got for you. And it was, you know, the size of a box that looked like it was an iPad. You can imagine just how kind of excited I would be. It's like, yes, I've been, 6 months, sent the message. She picked it up. Here we go. Open it up. And it's not an iPad 2. All right, and whatever it is, I'm sure it'd be something incredibly thoughtful, and you pick it out, and it's like, world's greatest dad, and you put it on, and you're like, baby, thanks, it's what I wanted, right? Just that feeling, you guys know, you can kind of identify with what that would feel like. Man, I was hoping it would be something else. It's not bad, it's just different than what I thought. And how that would kind of trigger an emotion within us. That's a great picture of expectations and the way it shows up in our marriage. And so we get expectations from a lot of different places. A big one is our family of origin, right? A lot of times we watch our parents' marriage, or we watch our grandparents, or however that worked, both good and bad. We watch them, and we pick up kind of cues about what we think expectations will be. So like one of our favorite ones about family of origin was we lived in this house, one of our first houses in Dallas. house, and I was going back and forth to the bedroom, and these boxes kept piling up in our hallway. And I didn't notice the first one, the second one, the third one, but pretty soon, you know, over a course of a few days, there was this big pile of boxes that were in the hallway. And I was like, Pam, what in the world? Like, you don't store boxes in the hallway. And she said, well, I'm waiting for you to put them up in the attic. You know, and there was the attic crawl space was right there. And I was, what do you mean? I go, I'm waiting for me to put them up in the attic. She's like, well, that's what you do. And I said, what are you talking about? And so we talked it out, and come to find out in her family, anytime something needed to go up and down the attic, her dad did it. There was like this real little space. You had to be kind of a contortionist to get in, get out. So if you wanted something in the attic, you just put it down there by the steps, and her dad, you know, like a little magical elves, things would go back up into the attic. And you wanted something down, you just let your request known, and you know it would appear. And in my family, if you wanted something out of the attic, like, you went and got it, you know. And when you're done, you better put it back. And so we had two totally different expectations about the way the attic was supposed to be run. So now that we know, it's no big deal. I'm generally the guy that's in and out of the attic. You know, she just kind of lets me know, piles them up, I put them in there. But we didn't know we had that expectation about the attic. Right, come to find out, we had a lot of expectations about a lot of things that we brought into the marriage based on our family of origin, right? So our church, a lot of times, where we go to church, how we perceive spiritual leaders, that will give us our expectations and cues about marriage. I just remember this story. Todd Wagner, one time, he's our senior pastor here, shared a story about, he was talking about fireplaces and how he loved to gather his kids around and have hot chocolate and tell stories and just talk to the kids about Christmas or the Bible. I can't remember what it was. And so I had this woman just go, you know, my husband's not like Todd. I want that picture of around the fireplace with hot chocolate and stories and things like that. And I was like, are you serious? You know, at the time, Todd had 6 little kids. And I was like, there's no way that he is sitting around. You can't get 6 kids to sit down with hot chocolate, you know, and listen to a story. That's insane. But she had so latched on to what she thought like a Christian man did and the way he led his home, she became really, really frustrated that her husband wasn't like Todd Wagner, super dad, super husband. And she wanted some of that because that's what a godly husband did, you know. And I was like, I think they had like a 2-year-old at the time, you know, and so you know how insane that is, but we latch on to things. So our friends, a lot of times we look at them and we say, hey, they appear this way, and that's what we think. He does this well, or she does this well, and we think we should have that, and we've got that expectation based on what they do. We compare kind of the best of what we know about someone, or what we don't know about someone, compared to everything we know about our spouse. And so we know them 360. We know someone, the glossy veneer they appear towards us, and we say, that's what it looks like to be married well. I want that. Okay, so friends a lot of times can play into that. And then, you know, we cannot underestimate just media and society. The cues we take, and especially we're watching our newlyweds and our pre-married couples coming in with like some crazy ideas about what it looks like to be married. And I'm so tired of hearing the word soulmate. This idea that like Hollywood kind of portrays, the only option is that I find this person that makes me feel unbelievable and amazing all the time, or I get divorced. Like there's no middle ground, and that really is the message, the kind of the Hollywood sins. And so I may have shared the story in here before, I can't remember, but I had this woman back when, you remember, Tom Cruise had left his wife and was dating Katie Holmes. Some of you don't care. It's like the one movie star that I actually know about. I know nobody's name, but I remember that happened, right? And so Tom Cruise was just flipping out about Katie Holmes, right? And so this was like now the third time he'd never felt this way ever before, right? You know, and he's on Oprah, and he is like, literally, if you guys remember this scene, he's like jumping on the couch. He's talking about her, and he's like, and jumping the couch has become a metaphor for just kind of, I think, losing your mind and being stupid. And so he's jumping on the couch, you know, he's going, I've never felt this way ever before, you know. And he's having an affair with, you know, a girl half his age, which, you know, probably would be fun, you know, for a little while for most guys. for a little while, you know. And he's screaming and yelling, and he's talking about how amazing he feels, and she comes out, and he gets on the couch and falls on the ground and hugs her and is jumping up and down and can't complete his sentences, you know. And I had a woman come in to my office, and she said, "Well, you know, he doesn't feel that way about me that Tom Cruise feels about Katie," you know. And I was like, "I'm a Christian and I'm a pastor, and I can't cuss or hit anybody in here, but you." That's the craziest thing I've ever heard. You know, he's having an affair with a woman, and he has lost his mind. Right? He is not thinking rationally. This will catch up to him. He's been married two times. That is a horrible place to look for an expectation about marriage. And so that's nuts. We think that's crazy. But we absolutely look at TV and media and let that kind of impact the way that we think about marriage. And so it sets a false expectations that aren't met. And then we become the iPad at Christmas that's a shirt we aren't really crazy about. And we let kind of our frustrations or disappointments be known. Okay, so how do we handle them? A lot of times, the problem is, I think we've alluded to it, but basically it's three things. One is that we're unaware of our expectations. So sometimes we're totally, like, you know, the iPad thing would be, like, I couldn't have been more clear. That's what I wanted. But a lot of times we're not even sure that we knew what it was that we wanted until we don't get it. And so it was a vague expectation about the weekend, and she made other plans, and her mom and dad are coming into town. You know, and you're like, now that I think about it, I just wanted to watch football. Okay, that was just it was unknown. You didn't even know that expectation until you didn't get it, and it triggered something in you. Okay, another one would be that it's just kind of unreasonable, right? So back to the long, you know, conversation or sexual escapades. I mean, like, some of the things that our pre-married couples tell us they have expectations about marriage, we just go, I mean, you are going to be disappointed. That's just, no, nobody can do that, right? Unless they wear a cape or walk on water, he can't do those things. And so if you've got unreasonable expectations about your spouse, both in big and small things, you're going to be disappointed, you're going to be frustrated, and it will be the hope that is deferred out of Proverbs 13:12. It will make your heart sick, okay, because you're unreasonable. And then thirdly, a lot of times they're just unspoken. Right, we haven't told our spouse our expectation. This is a huge one. We kind of build these things up, right? And so sometimes it can start because we had a misunderstanding at the beginning, right? So she calls and says, "Hey, what time are you going to be home?" And he says, "I think I'll be home as soon as I can," because he was thinking she had plans that night, and she did have plans that night, but it wasn't the plans that he had that night. And so after dinner, both of them had expectations that weren't spoken, and they're both frustrated because he didn't want to sit on the couch and talk, and, you know, and she wasn't wearing something that kind of excited him, and she was wearing the baggy t-shirt from college, and that wasn't what either one of them had expected, and they hadn't spoken it. Okay, and a lot of times we hold our spouse to this standard that we haven't communicated, and we get really, really frustrated. And if we'll think about it, a lot of times we've never let them know. And we're holding out. We'll punish them. We'll give them the silent treatment. We'll react harshly. And they have no idea why, because we haven't spoken them. Okay, so the better way to handle expectations is just, number one, just to make sure that you're aware of them. Okay, that you know what it is that your hopes, your desires are, and you can articulate them. Right? So next time you get bent out of shape or something kind of triggers inside of you, just go, where did that come from? Oh, yeah. Well, I had an expectation that you were going to do this, and you didn't. And so that, I think that kind of, you know, it kind of bent me out of shape. So let me tell you about that, just to become aware of them. The second one is just to be reasonable about what it is that you expect. I mean, is it even reasonable for someone to do these things, right? And so some of us just had moms or we had dads, pimps, you know. And a lot of times it's not right or wrong. They're just some of the expectations just they could be unreasonable. Pam's dad was an unbelievable guy in a lot of respects, and so he would read every night at dinner to the kids. You know, after dinner they just kind of push the plates off, and they've got all these books and all these incredible markings, C.S. Lewis and, you know, Chronicles of Narnia and all these kind of things, you know, and which is great. It really, really is amazing. And my family came to the table to eat. That's why we came there to celebrate food. We didn't come there to talk, read books, or catch up. We came to eat. And so, but with our schedule, with our kids, we can't eat every single meal together, and we can't sit down for 2 hours at a time. And so if Pam had that expectation that, you know, it would be library time with Dad, you know, for an hour and a half every night, it would just be unreasonable. And a lot of times we just have these expectations pulled from somewhere else that are not reasonable. And if we think about it, we really shouldn't be asking that of our spouse, okay? So just ask, is it reasonable? And then thirdly, just ask, have you been clear? Right? Have you communicated your expectations to your spouse? Do they even know what you expect? And so again, like, because I've got an inner Clark Griswold in me, time off after the holidays, I'll have all these incredible plans with Pam and the family. My propensity is not to communicate them, and then to be frustrated when Pam doesn't know that, you know, this morning I woke up and we were going to drive to Fort Worth and go to the Children's Museum and look at Christmas lights and eat hamburgers. She had no idea, right? But I'm now bent out of shape because she's still in her pajamas at 9 o'clock, you know, because we don't have anywhere to be. And so can you be clear about what your expectations are, both in the small things and the big things, okay? And I do want you to know that expectations are both little. It is the weekend plans. It is what we're going to watch, you know, tonight on TV, what we're going to eat. And it's really big things too. It's where we thought we'd be financially at this point. It's where we thought our sex lives would be, where we thought we'd be spiritually with each other, the way we thought our kids would relate to us, whether we would have kids. And a lot of us had hopes and dreams and expectations about having kids, and infertility kind of came to the surface. Okay, and we will bump up against disappointments. We will bump up against unmet expectations. We will have our hope deferred, and we will have a heart that's sick. So what are we going to do? Well, one option is just to get angry or withdraw. That's kind of the more natural play. That's what all of our bent is. And I think the better place is to turn to God. Right? Talk them through first. And the first thing is actually to talk them through with our spouse. Hey, are these clear? Is this reasonable? You know, and am I aware of my expectations? Talk them through. Your expectations were unmet. Don't get angry. Don't freak out. Talk them through. Okay. And if your spouse is unresponsive, just to go to God. Go to God with them. Okay. And your life isn't over. Your marriage isn't doomed. Your spouse is human. They will let you down. Life will be hard. It will punch you in the mouth at times. It's not what you wanted, not what you expected, but it's not over, and we can go to God with it. Okay? So one of my favorite verses, Psalm 23:5. This is David just kind of crying out to God. In verse 25, he says, "Who have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever." My spouse, my job, my friends, my kids, they will let me down. They will. Take it to the bank. They will do so before you get home tonight. They will let you down. And yet we can see God as enough. We can see God as our strength. And we can see God as a portion. God is enough. I'm looking at my plate, and there is enough on this plate for me to be satisfied. It's okay if I want more. It's okay if I wanted something else in addition to this. But what's in front of me is a good portion, because I have God. And so whether my spouse relates to me the way I want to or not, I don't have to get bent out of shape because I've got God. Okay? So all of us are going to have to put that into play this week. I will have to put that into play this week. My wife will. I'm going to have to remember. I'm going to have to remind myself that God's enough. And you will too. Okay? And that is the way we handle expectations. And we've got expectations about everything under the sun. And I do mean everything.